Hi there, and welcome to Enterprise Software Innovators, a show where top technology executives share how they innovate at scale. In each episode, enterprise leaders share how they're driving digital transformation and what they've learned along the way. I'm Evan Reiser, the CEO and founder of Abnormal Security.
And I'm Salmo Tamidi, a general partner at Greylock Partners.
Today on the show, we're bringing you a conversation with Scott Howitt, Chief Digital Officer at Ultimate Kronos Group. In prior roles, Scott has been a CIO, CTO, and CISO across several industries during his career, giving him a unique perspective into a world of deploying technology initiatives at large companies.
In this conversation, Scott shares how the CDO role can be an impactful agent of change within organizations, the important fusion of technology and business outcomes, and his view on startups and next-generation technologies.
Well, cool. Like I said, thank you so much, Scott, for making time. I do sincerely appreciate it. Maybe you can share with our listeners who might be unfamiliar with UKG, like what does UKG do and what is your role as Chief Digital Officer?
UKG stands for Ultimate Kronos Group. So it's a merger of the old Ultimate Software and the old Kronos Software companies, and they came together. Kronos mainly did timekeeping and Ultimate did more of the HRIS type software. And so bringing that together is a real good synergy of everything that you want to do around human resources, kind of meeting people and where they work. We provide the software to do that. And so my role is Chief Digital Officer, the CIO, the CISO, and the Chief Risk Officer report into me. And I'm kind of helping bringing those two companies together, bringing those technologies together, bringing all those foundations together, and really getting us ready to scale up for pretty rapid growth that we're going through right now.
And Scott, one of the interesting things about you, and one of the reasons I was excited to have you on our show, is that you've played like most of these roles, right? Different companies, right? You've been a CIO, you've been a CISO, you've been a CTO. And so like, when you think about kind of the organization, like what are some of the differences of those roles, right? And how do you, where do they overlap? Where do they, where are they kind of, functionally different?
Yeah, it's interesting because I always see it in a lot of organizations where a lot of times I hear about the tension between especially the CISO and the CIO. And it's like, oh my gosh, if you two could work together, it'd be like Wonder Twins coming together, right? Like you could bring a lot of power into the organization. And so I think the way I ask my CISO to think of it is stop being traffic lights and roadblocks. When you come into the organization, think of more like anti-lock brakes and traffic circles where you're putting good guidelines around the organization, but really the safeguards help the organization move faster, not slower. And then from the CIO point of view too, like I think somewhere along the line, developers have forgotten that developing is an engineering function and there should be some guardrails and safeguards around it. And so if you work with a CISO, you can really help automate those functions and bake them into what you're doing. So security by design, privacy by design, chaos engineering, threat modeling, all those things should really synergize just into the DNA of how you develop software, especially SaaS software, right? If the two really work together, they can bring a lot of power into the organization because you can be developing secure software, but doing it more rapidly if you really work together to bring those things into a synergized function.
Scott, a lot of that really resonates. And I was thinking as you were speaking, how should a company think about if they need a CDO and when they should bring in a CDO?
I did a lecture series when I was at my last organization, and it was about the CDO in that role. It was interesting because my thought was, hey, CIO, you should never let a CDO into your organization. You need to be the guy who's innovating faster, and you convince them they don't need a chief digital officer to come in, right? In some cases, maybe that's a little unrealistic. Maybe, the CIO is too entrenched. Maybe it's whatever. But I do think my real role is chief bridge builder. It's really sinking my time in with the product team and then my old IT team and the security guys, and really a lot of times in the business itself, and saying, okay, if we want to go faster, here's how we do it. In a lot of cases too, it's getting rid of half the tools that you have because you're only utilizing about 10% of them, and like really lean into the ones that you know are going to be your go forwards. Right. And so we had 7 different ways to do CI/CD pipelines, which I see across all sorts of product teams. And it's like, does that really add value into what you're doing? Or is it just, he knew Jira, the other one knew Puppet and Chef. That's why we went the way we went, right? And really taking, again, if you make that automated and seamless, then the question becomes, so why aren't you using the standard method? Just go do that and concentrate on product where we make our money and make our margin, right? And so I think that's really the digital guy. It used to be like the CTO was super valued because he brought a lot of new technical thought or innovation into the business. I think the digital officer is real role is to kind of marry up process and technology and forward-looking strategy. Like, how do I help you get there and really work that way? Or at least that's how I view my role.
How do you create the culture and system for disruption innovation without losing like all the great things that got you to where you are today?
What I'd like to do is, again, back to, does it, you know, just asking the simple question, like, where's the value in this? What are we really trying to drive here? And two, then I think also, again, you got to look at where are we going? Because again, if we want to be more innovative, we could have just stayed a time clock company and that's all we did and all we did and all we did. But it's a commodity. You know, what we're doing in the HR space is more innovation. So, hey, how could we make things work better for the employee? How could we maybe, hey, you're underutilizing your healthcare. Here's maybe a better way to think about it when you sign up. Or, hey, looking at your work schedule, maybe it would be better if you took some more time to do this in the middle of the week or stuff like that. And you know, really meeting people where they work. I think that's, you know, that's where our value is. That's what makes companies want to buy us. And so really helping people understand, like, where do we derive value and how do we drive towards that, I think is what's important. Back to the how do you disrupt it? You do got to challenge the status quo. Like, why are you so in love with the process that we have today? And sometimes there's good reasons. And if there is a good reason, I'll have learned more about the business. And so I know how to think about it going forward. But sometimes there's not a good reason. And then it's really good to dig in and challenge and say, well, hey, I think I can come up with a better way to do it. Let's work together and figure that out.
Are there examples you've had, right, in your career, right, where by kind of going down to the details, the light bulb kind of went off, right? Or, you know, what any examples where that kind of just like getting close to the metal, getting close to the real world helped kind of you identify disproportionately big opportunities?
Yeah. One of the biggest mistakes that I think technologists especially make is I've been in a lot of organizations where, oh, the technology department is a separate floor or it's another building or whatever. It's like, no, like to your point, go stand in the pit with the boss and see how the pit actually runs. And then you go, oh, okay, here's how the technology should work. I don't know that it's fortunate, but I've had to do like two or three ERP implementations during my career. It's never fun. You know, it's pretty ugly. But yeah, go understand how we process invoices or go understand how we recognize revenue. Or once you do that and you can speak in their language, like, you know, techies, we're really good at not having much respect for people who don't understand all the techno jargon that we use. Guess what? The CFO is thinking the same thing when you don't understand EBITDA and how revenue is recognized and what AAR is and what PEPM is. And like you need to be like a UN translator, right? Like you have to know multiple different languages to be a successful executive. And I love how you said it. I think of it like as a sine wave, right? Sometimes you're way up above the business, kind of doing a strategic plan, but occasionally you've got to dive down and get exactly where the troops are and understand what they're doing. And then when you've got a good handle of it, start pulling back up again and rearranging all the pieces so that it falls into place. And I think too often technologists are like, hey, I'm just a technologist. I don't need to understand the business. And it's like, you have no purpose in life if it were not for the business. And too often, technologists kind of forget that, yeah, they're here to support a business, not the other way around.
I guess maybe it'd be interesting to hear about some of the specific technologies you're most excited about right now. I don't know if there's one or two new technologies that you've intersected recently that you think really can drive business outcomes, and it'd be interesting to hear what those are.
I'm seeing really cool behavioral technologies come out that are looking at how APMs are working and identify, hey, I think there's a security problem because I know what the happy path on the APM looks like and something's going outside around the happy path, or maybe the performance is really getting bogged. So I think it's something's getting attacked or whatever. And I see that. And in fact, it is sad because I talked to one company that I've been looking at for a while, you know, since their incubator stage. And I thought they had some really cool technology. I met with them and they're like, we're kind of going to become behavior DLP. And I'm like, oh my God, DLP, like, why would you get in that space? It's a horrible space. It takes up tons of resources. And I'm, well, that's the only way the security guys will recognize it. I'm like, oh no, that is the problem, right? Like there's technologies out there that we don't have a name for yet that really take advantage of the ability to at least take machine learning, you know, AI, maybe they're there, maybe they're not, but at least take machine learning and understand really complex patterns and make some sort of inferences out of them. That's the technology that really gets me excited, because that kind of insight into behavior will really drive some really cool innovation and some conclusions that I think humans would have never come to on their own. And so I love looking at all the new technology. I think we're just now starting to see those technologies emerge, and I'm seeing some really cool stuff come out of it.
So Scott, you know, AI is an interesting topic, right? Where I think initially there was a lot of hype, right? And then I think the realities of today didn't match the hype, the promise, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, do you think there is some substance there? Are there anything you're excited about the future application of AI? Or are there ways that you think AI can impact companies like your business, right, in ways that maybe people don't fully appreciate yet?
Number one, I do think there is the, when you finally, you know, get the hype around AI and ML, right? I think we say it a lot, but nobody is for sure what it means, right? And then once you do get the implication of what it is, you are kind of going through that Gartner hype cycle. It's like, oh, wow, like everybody's on board. It's really cool. And then we see the first products and hit right in that trough of disillusionment, right? And I think we're starting to see products come out of it where it's like, okay, we're getting some actual realization. And so I do believe there's a lot of it, a lot of things that we can do with it. And we're exploring it at our organization too. Yeah, I can do everything that you would expect a Workday or Ceridian or PeopleSoft to do. You know, I do talent management, I do timekeeping, I do all those things. But hey, when I watch how the employees interact with that, like, what can I tell the employee about their work life that can help them maybe be more successful at work or get better work-life balance or help them to do their job better? Like, I think then people would think your system's pretty cool that it helps them do that. I'm not sure I'm in love with it, but even like the Microsoft email that I get said, hey, here's how you spent your day yesterday. Maybe you should do more of this today or whatever. It does takes me 2 seconds to read the email, but every once in a while it's like, actually, I probably could use some time to go do this.
How do you view collaborating with startups when trying to deploy technology to solve business problems?
I do think startups are important, right? It gives new views on how to do things and all that. I think it depends on the area of the business that you're addressing. If it's a key business function, maybe I don't have as much appetite for taking a risk with a newer technology. But you know, if it's a side business or a smaller piece of the business, maybe I have a lot of appetite for it. And two, I think a lot of startups, you can start small and kind of guide them along. So, you know, there's quite a few smaller startups that I've done work with that's like, hey, you know, I'll do it, but like one of the things I want is a seat at the table on the advisory board or whatever. It's super helpful because it's twofold. And if advisory boards are set up right, I've seen some that have been set up really well and some that are not so good. Good advisory board, 50% of the time is all the technologists in the room, the customers speaking to each other about, hey, here's the problem I'm trying to solve. Here's this technology that I've seen that's worked. Here's how we're using this new technology. Man, I've learned so much from those things of just new ways of work that I hadn't thought about before. But it should be like if the I've seen some advisory boards where the CEO or the chief product officer or the chief technology officer is an active listener, which is great. And then sometimes they become active defenders of what they're doing. And it's like, it's not the forum, man. You know, save active defender for the VCs and all that. Like, you should be just listening and taking it all in, right? And so I think it's really important that if you're working with a startup, that they want to listen and that you have that ability to have input into where they're, what they're doing and where they're going. It doesn't mean they have to take it all, but you should certainly be able to give them that feedback directly.
What would be your advice to, you know, CIOs or CDOs that are evaluating startups? Outside of evaluating the product, right, how do you evaluate the company and the team to make sure they're actually going to be good partners?
Look at their board, look at their investors. We all know, man, the longer I'm in this business, I know the PE and JV firms that want to go in and just squeeze it and go public. And I know the ones that want to help grow. We know who those are. So look at who's on their board, who's investing in them. But then go and have a dialogue too. Like, you know, when I was at Black Hat, my thing is with all the vendors is it's like, it needs to be the CEO, the CTO, or the chief product officer. Otherwise, I don't want to talk to him because I really want to get the heartbeat of where is this company going? What's your vision? What's your exit strategy? All those things. Because if it's really a partnership, let's not worry about price is the last thing I get to, right? It's how would we come together and how would we work together if we formed a partnership? And it should be a partnership, not a vendor consumer relationship. And that's what I really look for is guys that I believe really want to go out there and partner with me. I'll accept that sometimes some of the things that are going to be released aren't quite right. You accept that you're going to listen to my feedback. I think if we have that kind of partnership, we'll be in good shape.
Connecting this back to like transforming the culture of a company as part of being a CDO, what are one or two things you've done to transform the culture around being more open to and working with startups?
You know, I remind people of the, it used to be the saying in technology as well, nobody ever got fired for hiring IBM. It's like, true, but I bet you there's a lot of CIOs that, you know, were asked to finally go out to pasture or whatever because they always took the safe bet. And so we know what the safe bets are nowadays. Is, you know, it's a Microsoft of the world and all that. You know, like it's just safe to go with the old safe. I can always go in the upper right-hand quadrant and say that's who I should go with. And I would say if you're doing that, you're playing to not win, you're playing not to lose. And that's, you can't be in that business today. You have to be in the game to win. And winning means taking some chances, intelligent chances, right? So again, go back and make sure you're doing business with the right person. But like, we're not just going to make all safe bets. And so I think that's the trap that too many CIOs get into is like, ooh, I can't make a mistake and fail. And so I'm going to make the safe bet. And I think all that you have to do is say to your executive team, hey, this is kind of innovative technology. It might have a few hiccups, but I think it's going to put us this much further ahead of what our competition is doing. And here's why. And as long as you can make that business case and tell them, hey, we might have some mistakes along the way, that's okay. Because, oh, I'm pretty sure last time I looked, I think we all experienced team outages somewhere along the way or Office 365 outages. Like it happens to all of us, right? And so, you know, it's okay to take chances as long as everybody understands why we're taking the chance.
That's really well said. And I almost think about it as like, we often talk about the cost of taking risks, but there's also a cost of not taking intelligent risks.
Normally one thing we do at the end is we kind of do like a bit of a lightning round. Wanted to just go through a couple like high level questions, right? And just want to get your like lightning round version. It doesn't have to literally be one sentence, right? But whatever you think is appropriate. Sam, do you want to maybe kick it off?
What part of a CIO or CDO's responsibility do you think is most underestimated in its importance?
Their ability to understand the business. And their ability to walk into a room of executives and not be the tech guy in the room. They're just another executive in the room.
How should a CEO assess performance of a CDO?
By the amount of business, not technology, business transformation that they're seeing in the business. Hey, is it easier to close the books at the end of the month? Hey, do we have more customer interaction? Hey, are more sales happening? That's where you know that the CDO has been successful.
What do you think is like an underhyped technology? What is technology you think is going to have a bigger impact than most people realize?
I think headless technology is going to have a bigger impact than people realize. The ability that your technology can work on an Echo or in your car or on your phone or whatever, I think that's going to be huge, because if I think of all the technological interactions I have on a normal daily basis that aren't my PC, in fact, now my PC is my least favorite method of interacting with people. So headless technology is huge.
And Scott, is there a common mistake you see kind of first-time CIOs making right when they first get into that position?
I would say the mistake that I most often see CIOs make, and again, I think this could be the same thing should be said of the digital officer, right, is, again, spending too much time with the technologists and not enough time with the business. And so, you know, I can't stress that enough, how important it is to go out there and figure out what the business is doing. And so I think that is the CIO, trust me, I'm a huge introvert. So I love going and hiding in my cave every once in a while. And, you know, I can do that by going down to the technology floor and just hanging out with those guys. But again, that's not where the money's made. They might be the money enablers, but the money's made in the other areas of the organization. I spend a lot of time with the sales team, right? Because I want to hear what our customers are saying. And I want to hear what the, you know, our sales guys are saying. Doesn't mean I'm going to follow all of it, but certainly I want to know where their pain points are so that when they bring it up at a meeting, I know how to address it.
Scott, what's a recent favorite book you've read?
You know, it is funny because I did go back and reread The Phoenix Project again, just because I get something new out of it every time I read it. Two, I mean, I got to tell you, like the O'Reilly SRE book too, I reread a lot as well. And so just because it's one of those books that I always get something new out of it. And then I think for fun, I'm reading Bowden's book on Hugh, which is a Tet Offensive in the Vietnam War. It's actually super. He is one of the greatest historian writers that I think we have right now. And so I love reading all of his books.
Scott, it's so great to have you on the show and really excited to chat more again soon.
Yeah, I hope so too. I'm looking forward to it.
This was awesome. And I can't wait to go back and listen to myself. A lot of really good nuggets shared. Thank you.
That was Scott Howitt, Chief Digital Officer at Ultimate Kronos Group. Thanks for listening to the Enterprise Software Innovators Podcast. I'm Sam Motamedi, a general partner at Greylock Partners.
And I'm Evan Reiser, the CEO and founder of Abnormal Security. Please be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can find more great lessons from technology leaders and other enterprise software experts at enterprisesoftware.blog.
This show is produced by Luke Reiser and Josh Meir. See you next time.